Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris and you're watching Consider This. It's easy to get swept up in the festivity and merriment during this Hari Raya season, especially after 2 years of celebrating Raya whilst under travel restrictions. And that may mean getting carried away with spending during this Raya shopping frenzy. But with Malaysian households among the most indebted in the region, how do we ensure we stay in control of our spending during Raya to avoid the financial stress that comes in the days after? Joining us now is Suraya Zainuddin. She's a financial activist and founder of RingitOringgit.com. Suraya, you know, many of us are probably going to be quite tempted to spend more during this Raya season, maybe even overspend, especially, you know, since it's been 2 years since we've been able to travel during Raya, to balik kampung during Raya. Where do you think, Suraya, the money for Raya expenses should come from? There's been a lot of chatter lately about using the special EPF withdrawals to cover expenses during this festive season. What do you make of it?
Thank you, Melissa, for having me on the show. So if you ask me where the Raya money for Raya expenses should come from, obviously the best case scenario is that it comes from your own savings, all cash, no credit. Ideally, you would have been putting a few hundred ringgit every month in the last 12 months in a sinking fund, which you have already earmarked for Raya expenses. And then you paid all from it in cash and never from anything like credit card or personal loan. And I know that you have brought up EPF withdrawals, which is a very, very hot topic. And I'm going to bring up maybe like a personal opinion, if that is okay. There is a lot of advice out there on what people should do with their money from EPF. But my personal opinion is that I would rather pressure the government to come up with better policies rather than tell people what to do with their money. So the way that I see it, if in Malaysia, if wealth distribution is more equal and people already make a decent living, then maybe people wouldn't have demanded to take the money out, right? And this is not like a like an opinion, this is more like a fact. Like according to Department of Statistics Malaysia, the mean salary for Malaysians in 2020 was just 2,062 ringgit. 2,062 ringgit. And you know that cost of living is higher than that. So I can't blame people for wanting extra money. I can't blame them wanting the, you know, wanting to spend the EPF money, no matter where it comes from. Expenses are expenses. So again, the way I see it, the government should have done better with reducing, say, wealth inequality so that more people could have earned more, they could have afford to save money in the first place, they could have put money aside in that sinking fund. So when Raya comes around, they can actually afford to use their ready savings rather than all of these measures that are in place so that people can afford to celebrate.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds ideal to kind of squirrel away a couple hundred every month so that by the time Raya rolls around, you have this nice kitty to spend on, you know, family and expenses. But it's been a rough couple of years for many of us. And, you know, making ends meet sometimes means that savings takes a hit or, you know, you don't prioritize savings often. And I really, I'm appreciative of what you said about the EPF being a failure in some ways of how government should, you know, take care of perhaps its citizens. Can I just ask you then, you know, for those who may not have savings or who haven't been able to squirrel away throughout the year, what then should the options be? Is using EPF money for Raya expenses something that is perhaps acceptable or something that people should consider?
It comes up to where they are in the, I call it the saver spender divide. So natural savers, right? It doesn't matter where the money comes from EPF withdrawals, from own savings, they would have already this natural tendency to save money. Whilst natural spenders, it doesn't matter if they're earning 10, 15,000, 20,000 ringgit per month, but it still wouldn't have been enough. So rather than saying, you know, where the money comes from, it's, I think, more to like people's natural tendency to spend or to save. And then you have to add on that layer of you know, low salary in the first place. That means that where people should, you know, the money should ideally, like you said, come from own savings. But if they can't, and you know, obviously Raya is celebratory mood, it's very easy to get carried away. And the way that I see it, there are so many advertising and marketing that are created to increase desire in spending. I can't fault people for wanting to spend, honestly.
I don't know about you, but I felt it this year. I've really felt the temptation to spend. Maybe it's because the economy is opening up. Maybe there's also this kind of repressed desire to celebrate after being kept away from family and friends and festivities for a couple of years. What would you advise, you know, people who are trying to control that temptation to overspend, perhaps making sure we stay in control of our spending, because the bills will come at the end of the month? You know, there will be an aftermath after Raya. What advice would you give?
For sure. Yes, you are completely right. The temptation to overspend is real. And I'm a natural saver. And when I feel this, oh, I should get this, or I should get that,
I might be on the other spectrum, Soraya. I might be more on the natural spender spectrum.
I mean, no, it's not your, I wouldn't say that it's not your fault, really. Over the past few years, for decades even, the marketing technology, psychology in getting people, sales psychology has gotten more and more sophisticated. They put you in a, like this certain demographic box in order to target you better. They hire influencers that you like so that you buy from them. They use a lot of strategies to increase your desire to spend, right? So temptation is definitely real. But at the same time, if you ask me how can one curb this kind of desire, what I like to tell people is that if you don't see those temptations, then it will hopefully naturally lower your tendency to spend. So unsubscribe to your emails, especially for shops that you're weak at. Yes. Do things like block all those WhatsApp ads. Unfollow the influencers who ask you to buy certain things, right? So with those kind of things, the less that you see them, the less hopefully that you will be tempted to spend. Another thing that happens here is also it depends on who you surround yourself with. If your friends are also natural spenders, then you would be, you know, as a friendship group, you would, you know, show off each other, like, where do you get this, where do you get that? So I'm not saying that you should break your friendship, but just be aware that when your friends show you certain items, you will also increase that desire. And in order to reduce it, you might want to perhaps suggest different things or make a new
right.
Plans even,
so, you know, to be more mindful, you know, that there is that temptation, especially if you've got friends and family around and they're showing off new things or they're recommending certain things, there might be that temptation to spend more. The other money question that often comes up during Raya, it's always about the duit raya, right? What, how much to give, how much to put aside, how much to, or what to do with it even after. When you get asked this question, how much to put in Raya money packets, what do you say? I mean, is there a going rate for 2022? Do we have to adjust for inflation every year? Is that how we decide?
Wow, adjusting for inflation is not something I've thought of before. I'm going to give you credit. I might steal that. But when it comes to duit raya packets, obviously only give what you can afford to give. How I personally decide how much to put in the Raya money packets is that I think of how much money that I want to give out in total, right? Let's say 1,000. And then I do a list of names of people who will receive this duit raya. I will do like a percentage, like, okay, this person gets how much, this person gets how much, this person on how much. And this is totally up to you. And of course, this is easier said than done, but you should totally ignore the feeling of having to give more than you should. Or sometimes you just want to give a little bit more so that the other person who receives, you know, they don't say something like that about you, like, oh, it's too little, right? If you don't have much to spare, this is not the time to make it look like you have money. Perhaps if I may, I want to take this opportunity, if there are parents out there, I want to remind parents, please teach your children to not complain if they get a small amount of money, right? Because you know how children are, sometimes they just...
They're very direct, yes. No filter.
Yes. In this economy, if they get something at all, they're lucky, right? Mm-hmm. And personally for me, if I'm the giver, I don't want to give again to kids who were ungrateful. If they get my money, might as well I don't give them anything at all. So for parents, please have that chat with your children. If they want to complain, behind my back.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. And I like what you said. It's really the spirit is about the sedekah, the giving, and also the receiving, the gratefulness. And I think that is, we have to be mindful of that. You brought up parents, and I think that's quite interesting. Can I ask you, what should parents do with their children's Duit Raya? Should, you know, the children get to keep it, or do most parents tend to take it away and use it for household expenses, the rent they have to pay?
Oh gosh, this is a long this is a long debate, but in my circle, the money that the kids receive gets put into the kids' what do you call it, savings. But I am aware that for other people who are perhaps not as, don't have the same mindset, they might repurpose it for their education or for even for household expenses. This can get very like a very heated divide. I don't really want to go there. Parenting is one of those things that have no experience whatsoever. So, but of course, ideally, it should go towards their education fund. That would be like the best case scenario.
A quick one, Suraya, before we end. E-Duit Raya, what are your thoughts about QR codes as opposed to giving packet Duit Raya?
Oh, I am aware that the government is spending a lot of effort to promote E-Duit Raya, QR, cashless. Personally, there's something special about giving out cash, right? Something very nostalgic about it. So I'm in favor of giving out cash plus Raya packets are still so nice and pretty, but I do know that some of my audience have been mentioning that they receive or give out E-Duit Raya, especially if they're far apart. You know, it boils down to, the method is not the problem, it boils down to that gratefulness and mindfulness that you mentioned.
All right. Thank you, Suraya, for joining us on the show today. And let me take the opportunity to wish you Selamat Hari Raya. Thank you for joining us tonight. That was Suraya Zainuddin, financial activist and founder of RingitOhRingit.com. We're going to take a quick break on the show. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. And while Hari Raya is a religious celebration that comes after a month of fasting, it's worth remembering the cultural roots of the celebration. All the ways in which we express different forms of community solidarity, from the traditional clothes that we wear to the songs that we sing along to, and perhaps most importantly, the food that we share when it comes to celebrating in the month of Shawwal. Joining us on the show tonight, we have food historian Ahmad Najib Arifin, or affectionately known as Naj. He describes himself as a gastropologist, which is an amalgamation of gastronomy and anthropologist. Naj, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Salam Hari Raya to you. We have, I understand you've done quite a bit of research into the origins of food and culinary history. Can we talk a little bit about what you've discovered about Malay food culture, particularly during Hari Raya? How is it that rendang and ketupat became associated with this festival?
Well, to begin with, Malay culture is actually a very cosmopolitan culture. It's not very isolated. It's not just a single strain. It's actually many things mixed together. And even though there is a base to it, but on top of that base, there are so many things that go into it that make up a very modern Malay culture that is based on a very, very traditional set of elements, But those elements are all at the same time very traditional and cultural, but also very, how do you say, very flexible, and they can quite easily be molded from one family to another, from one area to another, from one state to another.
Okay, so it all kind of influences each other, taking on some of the influences, the fusion, and it, I guess, it grows and evolves. And I want to ask you about that because, you know, it feels like it's almost like a raya staple to have something that is rice-based, ketupat or lemang or lontong or any different forms of ketupat. And then there's also the accompanying dish of rendang or kuas sate or kuah kacang. What do we know about that? I mean, has that, the weaving of the ketupat and the boiling of the rice, has that traditionally been Hari Raya food?
Actually, it is the foods that you've mentioned, ketupat, lemang, and rendang that goes with it, and the other dishes that come with ketupat, such as lontong and all that. They used to be dishes that were not totally associated with just Hari Raya. You could have them for any kind of festivities, and that would include, besides Hari Raya Puasa, that would be Hari Raya Haji, that also be weddings and hari-hari keramaian, you know, those kind of things. But of course, being Hari Raya as one of the major celebrations and festivities that we have, so naturally, those were the kind of foods in those days that were associated with the festivities, because they were not that easy to make. You would have to, in those days, yeah, I mean, today, of course, with all the modern cooking amenities that you have, it's much, much easier. But in those days, you needed to really have the extra resources for it, because if not, then you just have your normal nasi and lauk and the other kinds of normal foods. Yeah, so they became festive foods by a natural progression, not a decree, not, you know, not a royal a kind of perintah or something like that.
Right. Okay. I'm also thinking that some of the ingredients that go into making these dishes would be considered luxurious ingredients, expensive or sometimes hard to come by, or even seasonal. Does that also inform the culture, the evolution of this culinary culture that makes it associated with a special occasion?
Actually, to a certain extent, yes. Because if you think about it, in the olden days, like I said, we now have a lot of modern amenities, including refrigeration. And in the olden days, when you didn't have refrigerators and all that, you really had to plan very carefully about when you would slaughter a cow or a kerbau, you know, a buffalo, a water buffalo for your for the meat that you would be using. And so that would be more associated with something that would be used by a lot of people and eaten during something special, kind of special period like Hari Raya. And so they did have an influence on how people would use the resources, because those kind of resources are not the kind that you would use every day. For them, for people in the olden days, they would be a bit more special. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's something you said about the preparation and the process of making the foods that we traditionally associate with Hari Raya, not just the lemang and ketupat and rendang, but I'm also thinking about kuih raya. Someone said something to me the other day that stayed with me. We were talking about making kuih raya this year, and they said, well, who makes kuih raya anymore? Everyone just buys. Maybe that's true for perhaps urban dwellers, but that got me thinking about the passing on of that knowledge of the making of traditional kuih, or the cooking, the traditional recipes, whether that's being passed on it's being kept or passed along in families in particular. What does the research say about that?
Okay. Now, yes, it is a pity that people are not cooking for themselves as much as people used to in the olden days. But then again, there is a silver lining as well, in the sense that you have passionate people who love to cook and who want to be in the food preparation and food or restaurant industry. And these are, as I said, passionate people who will look for the recipes, and they will olahkan balik, you know, they will use their own food fusion and things like that. Some will be very, very passionate about keeping it very traditional, very authentic. And then there will be some who would like to experiment with the new forms of traditional foods. And so when you push and pull, in the end, it still will be there. It will not die out. It's just that it is not as widespread in terms of everybody being able to cook it, like right. in previous generations. But it's still
right.
there.
It's like you have to know how to weave the ketupat and to make a rendang to kind of pass that test. You mentioned something quite interesting about the evolution of food. And I'm just wondering, as a food historian yourself, are you a purist when it comes to food, particularly Hari Raya food? And I'm thinking about the way our diets have evolved. I'm wondering whether vegan Hari Raya food is going to become a trend now that's going to become a staple in the future. What do you think, Naj?
Okay. Now, there's so much food influence and so much food preparation going on. And even during the Hari Raya season, of course, it's not just one meal. It's many meals. In fact, as we say, 30 hari puasa, 30 hari makan. 30 hari raya, and so every day you can have different kinds of the traditional foods that could become modern versions as well. And so for me, I'm neither a traditionalist, a strict traditionalist, nor am I a gung-ho modernist. I like to see that variety. That variety is wonderful. You do need to have the authentic traditional food cooked in as traditional way as possible, with kayu arang, that kind of thing. But then fine, you can also have the kind of kuih which you mix some. These days, the joke is that if you want to create fusion food, you just add cheese. And it becomes, nasi lemak cheese, pisang goreng cheese, all these kind. So, I wish it were that simple, but actually it's not. Yeah, it does sometimes border on the ridiculous. But still, I do appreciate that people are trying and, experimenting, because that's how we grow. And culture and traditions are not something very totally static. If they are totally static, they could die out. So we do need to have those traditions, but we should allow them to evolve, like we were discussing, that evolution is part of culture. And another part that I would like to mention about the food traditions is that in the olden days, actually, our kuih, our traditional kuih, they were not really that sweet. They were not meant to be sweet, because remember, in the olden days, gula, sugar, was not something so ubiquitous like you have now. You just go to any market, any kedai runcit, and you can buy sugar by however much you want.
By the kilos.
Yes. In the olden days, people actually made their own sugar. Our parents and grandparents' generation, they made their own sugar. So sugar was a very, very special commodity. And so you used it just enough that's where the Malay term comes, secukup rasa. It's not meant to be sweet like, the Western donuts and cakes, which are very sweet. And unfortunately, many of our our kuih makers today seem to want to compete with those donuts and cakes, Western style, very sweet stuff. So remember that our traditional kuih, they were more savory. If the taste is pandan, that lovely pandan taste is there. If it's a beras pulut kind of taste with santan, then that beras pulut taste, that santan taste is the
lemak,
highlight.
Right? Mm.
Yes, the lemak manis, not manis lekak.
Oh, that's really wonderful. I mean, what a wonderful point. Lovely description there, but also that turn of phrase, secukup rasa, is so beautiful.
It is, actually.
Naj, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Welcome.
Appreciate your time, and Selamat Hari Raya to you.
Selamat Hari Raya.
That was food historian Naj Arifin, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Thank you so much for watching. See you next time. Good night.